Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Of the Oregonian, OregonLive.com, had a busy day yesterday. If you missed the news, Daschle had the news first. 23 positions at Oregon State in the athletic department have been eliminated. There were about 16 people, including the senior women's athletic department staff member, who were laid off, positions closed. Athletic director Scott Barnes, it's my opinion, he's got to play big here. They need to be like a special forces team, not an army marching at daylight, plodding along. They're going to have to be nimble. They're going to have to, you know, move under the cover of night. They're going to have no centralized feel to them. That's going to be life moving forward for Oregon State. Meanwhile, late last night, a bigger story. A member of the football program, Jonathan Smith's football program, was removed from the football team after a video surfaced with an audio recording of Oregon State freshman tight end making racist remarks. Rocco Carley was kicked off the team Wednesday night. Apparently this chat took place 3 years ago, but it showed up on Twitter at 8:30 last night. Oregon State teammates immediately reacted in outrage. Carley issued an apology, said he was ashamed of his actions. Jonathan Smith, the football coach, saw enough or heard enough and immediately flushed him. I think it was the right move. Nick Daschle of the Oregonians joining us now. You were busy last night.
Yeah, I was up till 12:30 writing stuff. Yeah, it was felt like I was some of the people we've had out covering protests. Out cranking stuff out into the wee hours of the morning.
Jonathan Smith, I think, got it right. Yeah, to me, I don't even think that was a difficult decision. You got a player who's the comments were so inflammatory and so racist that I think it was just such an easy decision to say, you're not part of our program anymore. Do you see it the same way?
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, it just seems like a no-brainer, but then, you know, you just look back to last week and how long did it take, you know, Minneapolis to react to charging the police officer with, you know, not the same thing, but it was, you know, similarly awful, and it took them forever to charge this guy. And Jonathan, you know, he did it in pretty much the snap of a finger. There's just no way he could look his team in the eye if he didn't do something quickly and decisively like that.
It's really interesting because I did not foresee this coming. I had no knowledge of this, but I asked him yesterday on the show. I said, look, if something comes up, is that a hard decision? And he essentially said, you have to put the team first. And that's leadership, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm pretty sure he had no knowledge of this kid, you know, being like that. But, I mean, that's just when you the things he said were so over the top that I realized the kid was only 15 or 16 at the time, but I'm still having people emailing me today telling me, you know, oh, hey, you know, we've all done stupid things. We were young and yeah, blah, blah, blah. And why, you know, I'm just going, no, this is not that. You can't keep a team together when you know you have a guy like that out there as one of your members.
I think it comes down to leadership. I think Jonathan Smith has to decide, you know, what do I want my program to be about? And he heard something that he does not want his program to be about. And frankly, I think it, you know, it really supports the rest of the players. It supports that idea that the locker room, you have to have each other's backs. You can't have a teammate that's inside that locker room that's got that kind of feeling inside of him. And frankly, I don't care what his excuse is. You can go fish. You can go try that somewhere else.
Yeah, and this is one of those moments, they'll look at, maybe a year or two from now as one of those galvanizing moments that, Jonathan had our back. There wasn't any question about it. And you just don't know. I mean, he didn't do it for a PR move. He did it for the right reasons, but it's something that is definitely going to help him with his team because they know he's got their back.
Nick Daschle with us of the Oregonian. The athletic department loses 23 positions. Nobody likes to see anybody lose jobs. Scott Barnes last night told me it was the most difficult day of his career. He had to let these people go via Zoom call. What is the effect ultimately on the athletic department when you lose 23 positions?
Well, I suppose, for starters, it's just some of the little things, that they won't be able to do. They're going to have to, they're just going to have to cut out some of the, small things that you just don't really see that just can't be done anymore because you're missing, roughly, I think it's roughly 15 to 20% of their department. Beyond that, they're all going to take pay cuts too. So nobody's feeling good at all about this. Operationally, football games, they're going to have to figure out how to make do with less bodies, or maybe get some volunteers to help out. I've just talked to a few, some of the guys in some of the departments there, and there's going to be a lot of discussions here. How do we move forward? I know you've talked a lot about being, they're going to have to operate differently, and I don't really, I haven't given it much thought as to how that might happen. But you're right; they can't just operate like the rest of the Pac-12 anymore. They've got to figure out how to, focus on a couple of big things and make those happen. And I think we kind of were texting a little bit last night about Barnes, and I mean, really, with him, it still comes down to if Jonathan Smith wins, this is. He's good. He's good. That's what he needs to make the football team right. He makes the football team right, a lot of stuff goes right. If he doesn't, then none of this stuff really matters.
One of the things he and I talked about last night is his last appearance on this show. He said that, one of the last questions I asked him was, do you have any advice for graduates? Because we were talking on the show about advice for college and high school graduates, and he launched right into talking points about, seniors. And I really don't think he was either listening or paying attention, or maybe he's just so programmed that he went right into robot mode. He said he continued to listen to the show after he's off air, and he heard my criticism of him, and I got the sense that I hurt his feelings. He is a little programmed, though. I told him, I said, look, when you come on, you are a little programmed. You're a little bit bureaucratic. You're a little bit, it's hard for me to get past that. I just want to have a conversation. And I think he acknowledged that, hey, there's a level of comfort that he's still trying to find when he does an interview like this. His personality as a leader, what do you see in him? Because I think he's a smart guy. I think he knows the notes. I'm not sure if he's ever going to play beautiful music, but I think he knows all the notes. What's your read on him?
Well, he's not. I mean, at least from when I deal with him, he's cordial. He's friendly. But he doesn't give you a lot. He's not real forthcoming. He's pleasant enough. I know he's been around this stuff a long time because he used to be a college athlete. I just don't know that it's in his personality to be, a real, for lack of a better term, a salesman, the kind of guy you really want to, sit down and joke with and have a beer with and all that. But, that's maybe that's just the way he is. And I'm okay. Not everybody likes me either. Yeah, he's a little stilted. I'll give you that. But as long as he's not, as long as he's telling me the truth on stuff, I'm okay with it. But I mean, your criticism is not off base.
And I don't want to be mean, because I know that, like, you know, a lot of times when people come on the show, you've been on the show a number of times. I think the more people come on, the more comfortable they get. And I have the advantage that I'm on here 15 hours a day for 13 years. So it's like I'm at comfort level, and I'm getting Barnes, who's going, okay, am I walking into a dicey situation? What is he going to ask me? So I don't blame him for being a little bureaucratic. But I think amid, like, a staff that is going to lose 23 positions, this is going to be a real challenge. He's going to have to really relate. He's going to have to do more with less. And that's where I go, you know, you think it's about football, and I agree with you. But is it that simple to you? If Jonathan Smith wins, is Scott Barnes going to be a hero? And if Jonathan Smith doesn't win, Scott Barnes is a bum? Is it that simple?
Boy, I mean, that's the way college athletics is going right now at that level. I mean, if you make the football team right, I mean, you pretty much, I'm not saying you got a job for life, but boy, you're in pretty good shape, because the boosters, they love a good football team. And, you know, that's kind of how you're judged. You're judged on who you hire as a football coach and how much money you can bring into the program. And if the football program is going well, the money sometimes takes care of itself. So, I've just always been of that belief that it's football first and everything else just sort of. But a larger point, I guess, you know, with all with the coronavirus stuff, I got to thinking the other day, colleges have got, don't they have to start figuring out a way, this is a kind of a reset, don't they have to start figuring out a way to fund their programs a little differently? Because they're finding out that without football, they're just screwed. They are just screwed. And you know, your stock portfolio people will tell you diversify and all that stuff. Well, colleges are finding out, boy, we're not diversified at all. It's football or nothing.
One of the things he told me last night, and I'm talking to Nick Daschle here of the Oregonian, but one of the things that Scott Barnes led on last night is he said they're looking hard at the way they travel. And he said they're trying to figure out, you know, their non-conference games across all sports. Do they need to stay on the western part of the United States? Do they need to stop traveling outside of that footprint unless they absolutely have to for a while? And by the way, do they have to travel days in front of the game? Can they come in on a game day in some sports, or and minimize the travel expenses that way? It feels like they're all going to be on new ground here. And the problem I foresee at Oregon State is that some of the non-revenue producing sports, like women's college basketball and baseball, have been some of the more successful sports. I don't know how that's going to fly.
Yeah, I don't know either. And travel, I think, frankly, is probably not as big a part of a budget as people think it is. But, you know, there is still perception. I mean, is it really worth, say, for the women's basketball team to every year play host to a 14 tournament over in Hawaii? I mean, they host this tournament in Hawaii every year. Is it worth sending the baseball team to Arizona for, you know, a week and a half to 2 weeks in February to play baseball games? You know, should the men's basketball team go to the Cayman Islands this year? I don't know if they'll be able to, but that's, you know, it's going to be on the schedule. You know, should the football team, go to a hotel the night for a home game? I mean, that's tradition. I don't know the expense on that, but I think that's something. Those are things, you know, you have to look at, I think.
His salary, I brought up his salary in print today, and I brought it up to him on the phone last night. I said, look, you make $900,000, and, you know, I know that you gave 7% of your base salary as a donation back to the university's athletic fund, but I said, you know, you're paid more than these other ADs. And he sort of said, well, look, there's deferred compensation in some of these other contracts. And it's true. I looked at Rob Mullen's contract. There is a clause for some deferred compensation. And Jen Cohen at Washington, same thing. And I said, okay, well, maybe that's a fair thing. Maybe some of these ADs, they're making more money than we think they are. I still, though, look and I go, man, for that $900,000 a year in base salary, you get the headaches, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say a guy's overpaid or underpaid. I mean, you're kind of worth what you negotiate. He negotiated a pretty good deal, but I mean, then if you're one of the highest paid athletic directors in the Pac-12, which he is, I mean, you're expected to produce maybe at a higher level than some of those other guys. And to this point, you know, it's hard to say, you know, he's done a better job than other guys. I'm not saying he hasn't, but you know, we'll see with the football thing. You know, in a couple of years, we might be thinking, boy, this guy really knew what he was doing when he hired Johnson Smith. Well, you know, we'll find out in a couple of years, but whether he get the research, if he can get the football thing turned around and that West Side built, you know, I think most of the boosters will say he's worth every penny of what he's getting paid. If he doesn't, then they won't.
Yeah, and to be fair to him, I have never been one to sit back and go, you know, the guy's overpaid just because he negotiated. If the market dictated that he could get $900,000 at Oregon State, then I guess he's worth $900,000. I mean, I think that logic holds up. Nick Daschle of the Oregonian is with us. All right, so let's talk about the possibility of football. Jonathan Smith, yesterday on the show, talked about sort of being more diversified on defense, a little deeper on defense. He likes his quarterbacks. I like their non-conference schedule, especially since they're not playing like an Ohio State in there. I think that they've got some winnable games. I think they're going to be bowl eligible if everything folds out as expected. But what do you see for this season? What is the upside for this season and maybe in the near future? Is this going to be a success?
Well, I love their non-conference schedule, you know, because it's a classic, you know, really good game, middle of the road game, and a game you should absolutely win, and I love that they're playing Oklahoma State in the opener because that's a good team. They could be a top 10 team this year, but if you're going to play a team like that, playing them in the opener when anything goes, especially this year, I mean, it's a great time to play them because anything could happen. And, you know, I love playing Colorado State at home because I think they're going to be a decent team in their conference. And in Portland State, I mean, the chance to get off to a 2-1 start looks feasible. And, you know, you catch lightning in a bottle, maybe you start 3-0. You know, and they got 5 of their 9 conference games at home. And several of those, you know, some of those conference games at home are ones against, you know, some of the lower end teams in the Pac-12. So those are games, you know, you would hope they have a pretty good shot of winning. So I've said all along, I fully expect 2021 to be a bowl season. This one here, 50-50. It just depends on how the quarterback position turns out and how the offensive line develops over the course of the season. But I think they're going to be really good in 2021 because they're going to be deep with a lot of veterans.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, thanks for all your work, man. Kick butt.
Hey, thanks.
There he is, Daschle. You can read him on Oregon Live. I don't want to be unfair to Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State. And I hope my column was clear today that I'm not saying Scott Barnes is overpaid. I'm not saying Scott Barnes hasn't made a big move. I'm not saying that Scott Barnes, who was brought in, if you remember, after Gary Anderson and the Oregon State football program won that Civil War in 2016, Ed Ray, the university president at Oregon State, made a big investment in football. He got Gary Anderson, his athletic director from Utah State. He had to go and pry him away from Pitt and bring him in. But what I am saying is, when you lay off 23 or you close up 23 positions and you lay off 16 people, you had better be nimble. You had better fashion yourself as an athletic department, not as an army that marches by daylight, like, you know, Alabama, Ohio State, even Oregon. You'd better fashion yourself as more of a special forces unit that has to operate 5 or 6 people under the cover of night. I mean, that's essentially it. And what I think Scott Barnes really needs and frankly, I think most athletic directors in the Pac-12 conference need, is he needs a college football season first and foremost. He needs a successful college football season in which the revenue is coming in so that he could get his feet back underneath him. But in the short term, he needs Jonathan Smith to be bowl eligible this year. This year. That's what does it. He can't wait, I don't think, for 2021. He's got a new university president coming in from LSU, F. King Alexander. He's coming in. And when Barnes was on this radio show, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe. It's true. I don't know if you guys remember, Alabama Adrian and Judah, do you remember when Barnes came on the show? I asked him for graduation advice, and then he kind of stumbled at the end.
Yep. And we talked about it right afterwards. We noted that was back on May the 19th.
Okay.
So just a couple of weeks ago. And I think at the time we just chalked it up to just not being ready, John. I mean, you are pretty nimble sometimes and unpredictable with where you go with your questions. And I don't think he was ready for that. I'm not holding that against him. I'm not drawing a conclusion about his character from that. But it was notable.
I also think that he was within his right. Like, I'm glad that he said something to me. He said he felt like I was snarky with him after he got off the air, and that I said, I said he was a robot. He said he was a stiff. I made fun of him. And he's right, because I did. And I said, listen, part of it is I'm trying to get you out of that programmed bureaucrat mode. That's my job as an interviewer, is to try to pull away the talking points and get you out of like talking like you were programmed. And he is programmed. Like, he is wired that way. He is a college administrator who is wired that way. And I think my conversation with him last night will help, because I told him, I said, listen, most of what I want to do is I just want to make you relatable. I want to humanize you. I want people to be able to hear you give advice for college graduates and whatnot. And some of that comes in time. And I can remember Oregon AD Rob Mullins was a little bit the same way when he first got on the scene. He would come on the show and he'd come off, and I thought, gosh, he's a little bit of an accountant on the show. That's his background in accounting. And over the years, though, I think Mullins began to trust and know that, A, we've got a huge audience statewide, so all of your constituents are listening, your donors are listening, your season ticket holders are listening. So, yes, you want to be on this show, and you want to be performing well, and you want to connect, and you want to humanize. And Rob Mullins has dropped his guard a little bit, and I think it's made him very relatable. I will be curious the next time Scott Barnes comes on this show if he will drop his guard a little bit and be a little bit more like he was last night in talking to me. I think he was worn down yesterday. I've never had to lay off 16 people. I've never had to close up 23 positions. I've never had to do that, and especially not do it via Zoom call. But apparently yesterday, all day long, he was on the phone with people or on the video chats with people saying, hey, you don't have a job anymore. And I got him at the end of the night, and he called me, and I think he was worn out. And I think he dropped his guard a little bit. And what I heard was an athletic director that really wants to win, an athletic director that really knows he's facing big challenges like never before seen, and an athletic director that knows that they are reliant, 80% of their budget is reliant upon football. So without football, they're in a world of trouble, and so is everybody else. All right, you got the bald-faced truth. I'll take your comments. I think Scott Barnes and Oregon State need to come up big. What is it really about? And where does Oregon fit in this conversation? 503-417-7575. You got the BFT. Your phone calls. I'm talking about Oregon State Athletic Director Scott Barnes. My exchange with him on May the 19th ended with me asking him at the end of the interview, an otherwise serious interview, to give some graduation advice for college graduates. I'll take your phone calls on Oregon State, what needs to happen with the university at 503-417-7575. Here's that exchange that we had on May the 19th at the end of the interview. What advice do you give to college or high school graduates?
continue to move forward with your dream. We'll pay attention to what's happening. But, you know, in terms of going, if we're thinking about those that are planning to go to college, we'll open it because it's safe. And we've put measures in place to do that. So, that should hold up anybody. And as you think about that, it's amazing, the psychology right now, John. And I say this in two ways. One, in our enrollment numbers, in terms of applications, are really trending very, very strong. Now, we'll have to see how yield is, right, depending on everything. And season tickets are the same way. We're 94% renewal rate. We're in a place we haven't been in 7 years. We've got to see this, the other end of this. But it's interesting, isn't it, that with all this going on, what that enrollment number looks like for us application-wise as a university, and then what our season ticket piece looks like given where we sit today.
Scott Barnes, I appreciate you. And after he went off air, I sort of lit into, like, wow, he's programmed. He's robotic. See how he just kind of went. I think he kind of was confused about what the question was. Was I being mean to him? I don't think I was being mean. But I think it's worth a conversation. I'm glad he brought it up. I'm glad if he felt like I was being unfair to him, I'm glad he brought it up. Charlie's in Vancouver. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Couple things. First of all, if he didn't misunderstand the question, he's one selfish dude. I mean, it went from information do you want to give to graduates to, man, look at our season ticket renewal rate. Look at it. Woo-hoo. That's terrible. Secondly, nothing against him, and maybe I'm saying this out of line, but if I just let go 23 people, and I made $900,000 a year, I would be given a little bit of a severance back. $5,000 a piece, $115,000, Scott. It ain't that big a deal. You would look like a hero to everybody. You get more publicity than anybody could ever get. And thirdly, it's only going to be tennis and golf, John. 2 months from now, 3 months from now, tennis and golf. Everything else was a dream. Where we are touching people, come on. I mean, how are these food plants, where they're obviously not touching each other, exploding, and we're beginning to hear about it? It's going to happen. I get it. They had to find out because the financial model explodes otherwise, but instead it's going to explode the other way.
I appreciate that. I think you're probably right. I've said it's going to be speed bumps and wrong turns and dead ends, and I think we're going to watch clusters pop up, and it's going to be really incumbent upon the programs to test and test and test and then quarantine and quarantine and quarantine. But the bottom line on this radio show is that, look, I invite guests on the show, and I'm glad that Scott Barnes said to me yesterday, he said, hey, I listened after I got off the air last time, and I could tell that he felt like I was unfair to him. And I said, look, if you ever think I'm being unfair to you, let me know. It's not my, it's not my intention to do that. I'm just, his reaction there and the reaction to that question, I felt like he walked right back into talking points. And part of the frustration when you're interviewing anyone as a radio show host or a journalist, when you're interviewing anyone who's in a position of authority, I think the biggest obstacle is to get past the talking points and get into a real conversation. And when you can get into a real conversation with somebody on air that 60,000 or 100,000 other people are listening and eavesdropping on, that is a beautiful thing. Some of that, though, is incumbent upon the guest feeling comfortable with the host and the host doing a good job of making the guest feel natural and comfortable and, frankly, making them forget that 60 or 100,000 people are listening. And if I didn't do a good enough job of that, then that's
we interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.